Hi, I'm Bob Harrington from Stanford University. Thanks for joining us here on Medscape Cardiology and theheart.org. I'm here at the American College of Cardiology meetings in Washington, D.C., and I have a chance to discuss one of the late-breaking clinical trials that came out yesterday with my good friend and colleague, Dr. Clyde Yancey, who is a professor of medicine and the chief of the Division of Cardiology at Northwestern University.
Go Cats, man.
All right, so we're here to talk about one of the biggest pieces of news that's come out of the meeting thus far, and that is the Fourier trial, the first of the large outcome studies that will be done with the PCSK9 inhibitors. Put it into context, Clyde. Why was the room, not just standing room only, the overflow rooms had lines to try to get in?
So putting it in context is really a great question, Bob, because one context is the generation of science and evidence. Another context is, what does it mean to a clinician? And a third context is, okay, what does it mean to patients?
And maybe a fourth context is, who's going to pay for all of this?
There you go. So very quickly, I love the story of the PCSK9 inhibitor. It began from observational data, something you and I understand and know very well. And it was an aha moment, like, why is this group not having the same incidence of coronary disease, and why would their LDL be so low? And you discover that there's just this collection of people that had a loss of gain functionality of the gene for PCSK9.
Yeah, brilliant piece of science.
Amazing. Yeah. And then it goes through a rapid throughput, given how things have to progress in today's world. And now you've got an inhibitor that's a monoclonal antibody, and we go through the derivation of the monoclonal antibody. It's a terrific story in science. And to see it go from idea to data to bench to clinical trial testing to outcomes is absolutely brilliant.
And when you think about that time horizon, not that long.
That's
from
exactly
observation
right.
to clinical outcome data, although for those of us who have been waiting for the data, it seems like a long time.
And I will have you answer this part, because it was an exceptionally well-done trial.
Yeah.
And what I loved about it was that they addressed not only the potential benefits, but they very carefully incorporated assessments of potential issues and safety, right?
Well, let's dive right into that. Here was the question that we knew. We know from a lot of work that's been done with particularly the statins that lowering LDL in people who are at high risk for coronary events is associated with improvement of clinical outcomes. That's a truism.
Yeah, that's the LDL hypothesis.
That's
right.
It's true. It's true. And we know from the work done by the Cholesterol Trialist Collaboration and others that there seems to be this very predictable relationship between level of LDL, amount lowered, and clinical outcome. And I thought that a nice piece of addition to that at the lower end was the ezetimibe story.
Sure.
That highly predictable, very modest effect on LDL, very modest effect on clinical outcomes. That line keeps going from over 200 now to about 60. And then the question was, what if we lower it
even further? Yeah.
To levels of 20, 30, would the curve keep going like this? Or would it start to flatten out?
So think about what they did. 27,000 patients randomized to placebo or evolucumab either once a month or twice a month based on patient preference. I can't wait to see
the granularity on that. They didn't show all the data around that, but this is the first presentation.
Right. And so you look at the study and you begin to see some remarkable effects. There was a 59% lowering LDL. And what I really loved was that when you looked at the interquartile range of the magnitude of LDL lowering, the lower bounds was 19. That had that 25% of the patients in this study had an LDL less than 19. Bob, that's what I call a pause moment. We never have conceptualized the possibility of being able to get LDL to that threshold.
Well, the only thing that we knew about that was, again, from the observational epidemiologic studies, that there are populations who have exceedingly low LDLs. We know that when we're born, we have exceedingly low LDLs.
Right.
It's our lifestyle that, in some ways, over time, increases the level of LDL. But the question was, is that protective in a group of patients who didn't start down there against future coronary events? And is it safe to push people from an LDL of, 90, 70, 60 down to 20?
So what was very interesting was that when you looked at the composite endpoint, 15% improvement, that incorporated a number of very important clinical observations, if you will, heart outcomes like stroke, death, and MI, but also revascularization, admission for unstable angina, that was truism again. But I was really struck that the secondary endpoints, death, MI, and stroke, the stuff that matters every day in clinical practice, 20% reduction.
Yeah, 2% absolute. The primary endpoint was 1% absolute.
And I would not quibble and say 2% absolute isn't much. That's a lot for the leading cause of death and disability in this country. And then when you look at the landmark analysis, this is when I felt like, okay, I've just seen something spectacular. Because at 2 years going forward and at 3 years going forward, you're talking about 33% effect size, a reduction on events, curves diverging still. That's impressive. And this was a relatively short trial.
Yeah.
Who knows where the plateau is?
Boy, you just brought up, to me, some of the key issues. The first of which is trial really well done, the completeness of the data, high quality. Kudos to Mark Sabatine and the Timmy Group.
I think
it was a really well done study. The choice of the primary endpoint versus the secondary is interesting, right?
Yeah.
And you're heart failure guys. You guys have done this for years, where the primary endpoint is this expanded thing.
Right.
And then the secondary endpoint is what you really care about.
It's like, oh, by the way, we really should look
right.
at...
So traditionally what happens is you're way overpowered for the first.
Yes.
And you lose a little bit.
And
you lose for the second. But you're hoping you really hit it here, and you hit it here.
But there was a great comment that the study was actually powered
for the
secondary endpoints, which was great. But if you continue this dynamic and look at the other side of the coin, they had the presence of mind to say, let's a priori assess for diabetes.
Yeah.
Let's a priori assess for cataracts, the things that worry the everyday patient who has to be exposed to therapies. Other than injection site stuff, it was pretty safe.
Very safe appearing. And we'll get into the neurocognitive stuff in a minute.
Yeah.
But I want to tease through the components of the endpoint first. In some ways, they overthought the problem. That there was flat on the unstable angina with hospitalization. So that just became noise, and it didn't actually help tease out the treatment effect. All the treatment effect is in MI and stroke.
Yeah, and so
and
but
big
that
effects in MI and stroke.
That makes us have to say something that's very important, which was we didn't see it on death. And so there are some people that are saying, oh, is that a disappointment? No, statin therapy is very good therapy. So these are benefits over and above what you get with statin therapy.
Yeah.
So I'm not disappointed that we didn't see that at all.
I'm not quite all the way there. I really thought that getting further down, there was a chance of death. But I think you're right. I'm happy with an MI stroke diminution. But I am also concerned, in your earlier comment about the landmark analysis, we just didn't follow these patients long enough.
So what
happens?
Median
follow-up,
right.
26 months.
Right.
Median, 26 months. That's, you know, statin trials followed people a lot longer, the ones that showed mortality. So I think the mortality question is still open.
So that may be the exposure still with the data. That is, we follow it longer, we'll be able to see what happens to that group.
Well, and I'm hoping there's a message to the follow-up trials that are coming.
Yeah.
I'm involved with the Odyssey trial, and I know we as a study group will have conversations about should we extend the follow-up. Now that we've seen external data, should we go longer? I don't know the answer to that, but
so this is a
maybe.
Good question, because we've already addressed two questions that we think are important. What about the once a month versus twice a month? What about the longer-term issue on mortality? But I also would like to see a little bit more granularity on the patient groups within the trial.
Yeah.
Understand more about women versus men.
They did show that one forest plot. But
right. Understand more about older, younger, white, non-white. Those data will come forward. Yeah.
And as you know, getting ready for this meeting, I'm sure it was a last, up to the goal line.
But here's the real question on the table. Now that we have this information, and we've talked about this brilliant history through science and this great clinical trial.
What are we going to do?
What are we going to do?
Here's where I think the careful work is going to have to be done, and that's why I added the payer perspective. These drugs are really expensive right now, and they really had only been approved for FH patients. So people with really high LDLs that we know that have to get them down there.
It's almost an ethical thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And now... people are going to say, well, should we use them more broadly? Well, I think that what's going to happen is the formal cost-effectiveness analysis have to be done.
Right.
But I don't think they're going to support the current price point.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
going to be hard.
The companies are going to have to rethink what that price point is, because given that data, I'd like to use them in my patients. I'm not sure at that price point the system can bear that.
So there has to be some discounting. But there's one other data point that might influence that decision. Love to see what happens on Lp(a).
Yeah.
Because there are any number of patients who are at risk particularly because of that, and these drugs do lower that.
Can we pick out a group that maybe has preferential benefit?
Exactly.
And that's why your comment is so important, Clyde, about the subgroups.
Yes.
Let's just talk quickly about neurocognitive function, which had also been a concern. That looks to be been
can
put
we
to
just
rest.
Say Ebbinghaus basically settled that question?
It looks pretty good, doesn't it? I mean,
good.
Multiple measures of cognitive function, patient-reported changes in cognitive function, all of it looks pretty flat, good sample size, you know, nicely
although,
reported.
When you look at the cognitive study and look at the methodology, those are some pretty smart people.
I was thinking, you know, my own cognitive function was really put to the test by reading the methods of the paper.
Yeah.
But I do think from an overall safety perspective, the drug looks pretty good.
So why don't we wrap up and simply say, this is a new era because we can do more for atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease now than we could before. The target patient is the high-risk patient who's already been effectively treated with statin therapy but has not yet had a reduction in LDL to less than 70. This is for secondary prevention. Nothing that we're talking about applies to primary prevention. There are cost issues that remain, but we should all be engaged and think about using this appropriately going forward.
Great summary, and I'm looking forward to see what the guideline writers do. And in particular, I'm interested in, will they readdress the issue of targets?
That'll be very interesting.
It's going to be a good discussion.
Yeah.
You want to close us out, Clyde?
Thank you. Thank you very much for watching MedscapeTheHeart.org. As Bob Harrington and I have been reviewing this incredible set of data points that really opens up a new arena in cardiovascular medicine. Thank you for your attention.